the mess. I watch the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big time.
Hello, and welcome to Free Thought Radio Hour. You are listening to WOZOLPFM 103.9 live in Knoxville, Tennessee. And this is Free Thought Radio Hour with Doubter 5. And we have Wombat.
Wombat!
On the telephone. Welcome back, Wombat. This is an atheism show, and we'll be talking about atheism, free thought, humanism, rational thought, and science. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faith, gods, holy books, and superstition. And despite what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs, and you'll hear some of them right here in this program, and generally on this station. They are in the rotation. We'll also be talking about atheist and rationalist groups that are here in Knoxville and the East Tennessee area, and how you can connect with them. Did you know there's also an atheist television show broadcasting right here in Knoxville, Tennessee?
Hold on, Doubter 5. That question presupposes that there's an actual show that comes on somewhere.
Well,
you don't have any proof. You can't see it.
I do have proof. One of our fans, has been recording these shows and putting them on YouTube. You can go to YouTube. You can go to YouTube and look up Free Thought Knoxville, Tennessee, or what is it? Free Thought Forum, Knoxville, and you have all the proof you want. We've been broadcasting this show for 6 years, and we'll tell you how you can watch it online and interact with it later on in the show. Wombat, today we'll be talking about Christian apologetics and apologetic tactics. We'll also get into some...
Yeah,
we'll also try to get into some philosophical arguments for God and how to answer them. And if you would like to join us, you, the public, that is, in our discussion, you can always reach us at 333-5937. That's area code 865-333-5937. And we'll put you on the air. We'll be happy to hear from you and hear your questions and or comments. What would you say would be like the favorite go-to apologetic for Christians arguing for the existence of God?
Oh, wow, that's a great way to start. So, I've had the conversation of why people believe in different kinds of God. I have the benefit of working with a lot of different cultures that are in the top.
Uh-huh.
And the job that I've worked at. And I noticed that there does seem to be a consistent appeal that people make. And the most probable first one to make is one out of ignorance. Ignorance is also a heated word. A lot of people don't like that word. But there's really nothing wrong with being ignorant.
No.
Or being ignorant, I'm ignorant about a lot of things and I'm aware of that. Mm-hmm. So if you're aware that you're ignorant, you're totally fine. There's not an issue with that.
Yeah, it's just
but
a lack of...
being ignorant and then using that as a basis to claim something as true, mm-hmm. that's where the problem begins. And
yeah.
I see that along the lines of many different religions that I've been talking to, the most common one is definitely arguments that come from ignorance.
Right.
And you want to talk about that?
Willful ignorance is a big problem as well. I don't know and
sure.
I don't want to know. Type of that attitude. But, you know, argument from ignorance, like, you know, the sun, what keeps us planted here on earth besides, you know, God? God keeps our feet to the ground. If it weren't for God, you know, there would be no gravity, no this, no that, no other. We'd go flying off into space.
You get that a lot. You'll forget where did we all come from? Or how did we all get here? Or look at these trees. You know, those things.
Look at the trees.
arguments from ignorance.
Yeah, that's an argument for ignorance because they don't know how trees come about naturally. They don't know how sunsets are made or where the rain comes from, that type of thing. Matter of fact, I would think that argument from ignorance was the beginning of religions per se. Our early ancestors did not know about explanations for these phenomena, and they created agency. In other words, a super powerful being responsible for them, since they did not have
the
knowledge.
How did this agency come about? This is actually, you have a really interesting theory for this. Why do people come up with agency for things, and where did that come from?
Well, it's an evolutionary trait. If you think about evolution, you know, you always hear it's the survival of the fittest, but it's the survival of the organisms that fit into their environment most well. Let's say early humans, even before humanity, before Homo sapiens is what we're. They're out there in the bush, you know, they're trying to make a living, they're trying to, you know, gather and hunt.
I'm a caveman. Here, just a regular caveman. Mm-hmm. That's it.
And all of a sudden they hear a sound from the bush. Now, if you project that there's an entity in there and think of it maybe as a lion or a tiger and you run away, well, you live to have, you have more progeny. You live to reproduce and pass on that trait. However, if you're one of those people who thinks, it's nothing, there's nothing over there, you know, it's just the wind, and you're wrong, then a tiger may jump out of the bush. Yeah, tiger food. And that's the end of that. And you do not pass along your skeptical genes, as it were.
Sure, I can hear that.
Yeah.
So I had two different populations, mm-hmm. and one was more inclined to assign an agency to
But the thing about it is they don't die out entirely. There are still people like that, and that's a trait. It's just not a dominant trait. So, you know, the people who assign agencies to thunder and lightning and flooding and all this stuff tend to predominate in our human gene pool, as it were. Now,
I don't have a problem with that at all. I actually think that maybe even more accurately, cultures also adapt as well, also evolve.
Uh-huh.
And that could just be a trait that a culture adapted, as in they're constantly questioning their environment that they're in, and they apply agency to that. And I can see how that can carry to, you know, the cultures that we have even now as like a deep-seated trait among them. And I can see how that form of agency can also inform erroneously, or in the wrong sense, or misinform, people who apply arguments to ignorance on things that they can't necessarily understand, because they just have a culture that's very, very strongly adept at doing this particular thing where they apply agency to something.
Right. But we can also get past that by society deciding to educate ourselves on the cause of things like that and then moving on past it. And we as a society have moved on past. We have meteorologists who have studied this in depth, you know, the weather. We have people who watch them and trust them on TV. We don't assign, most of us, don't assign agency to the rain when it comes or the flooding. However, who does? Religion.
Yeah, we have a new culture that's adapted to not have to do that so much.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine there are still cultures out there that aren't necessarily as well informed, that have meteorologists on satellite TV that can tell them the weather patterns of the week ahead of time.
Right.
That may be more reliant on, you know, an entity, even if it's spiritual, telling them or informing them of what the weather would be like, or how the sun sets, or you know, whether they'll eat the next harvest or not.
Yeah. Well,
so I can see, like, if you don't have access to information, that just makes you ignorant, but it's not a problem if you're not using that ignorance to come up with solutions to solve things.
Well, we are. Not as a society generally, but in religion they do. What caused this latest hurricane to come ashore. If you talk to Pat Robertson, it was homosexual marriage. You know, and he's who's doing it? Well, it's not even a what, it's a who. It's God's doing it, of course, you know, to punish us for gay marriage. Now, if you think all the way back to biblical times, think of all the things in the Bible that were laid at the feet of God as far as blame. All the plagues and the floods and the frogs and the, you know, all of these things that God did because he was dissatisfied with the way that people were acting. Well, if you look at it in the light of Pat Robertson, it's a preacher's writing this book saying that their civilization, their society was being punished by God for not complying with what God wanted. And who interprets what God wants? The priests. So it was a way of trying to get the society to do what they wanted them to do.
Okay. I mean, I can see that too. So we have, we're a bit straying from the subject, but I'd love to talk more about how religion in some contexts were used for population control, and then maybe in other contexts how that could actually have been useful, because when you have a lot of different diverse people and you're a struggling tribe, being able to have multiple tribes come together under a single banner makes your tribe stronger.
Well, why, sure.
In certain cases, that can be very beneficial for developing things like a sewer system or basic forms of government or basic forms of protections, agriculture, etc. But moving on to arguments of ignorance, what cases have you found?
I'm following your question.
What cases have you found for argument of ignorance? I gave some examples. For example, I think that's the most common, the most common apologetic tactic that I've seen. People basically saying, I don't know how this works, so God must do it.
Right.
And then charging people with the question, well, how do you know this happens? And if they say they don't know, they may substitute God in as a substandard answer.
Right.
What kind of forms of apologetics have you seen?
Well, what you're talking about is boiling down to, I don't know how it could possibly happen, so God did it. There's another explanation, another line of apologetic that people use. They don't even know they're using it, but you know, look at that sunset. It's so beautiful. There's nothing in this world that could create something like that except for a God. It's an argument from incredulity. They just can't.
Incredulity. What is this?
Oh, it means that something is so awesome it just had to have had a God to create it. You know.
I think I may have heard of this.
Yeah, well.
Is this the, like, for example, if someone says, hey, man, look at this cell. This cell is so complex. No one else can build this cell. No science, no technology. Mm-hmm. It's so deliberately, you know, complicated. Mm-hmm. It must be divinely inspired.
Yeah.
Is that the same kind of thing that you're talking
about? That's more of an argument from argument from complexity. But a while ago, do you remember that woman who was the first woman who swam from Cuba to Florida?
Yeah.
And she was interviewed on the Oprah show. And Oprah said, how did you feel standing on the shore of Florida after swimming 90-something miles to get across? She said, I was just in awe. I was just in awe of the ocean, the sky, and the wind in my face, and all that. And she said, and God? And she said, no, I'm an atheist. And Oprah says, well, I don't believe you're an atheist because you have awe. So that's an argument for God from incredulity that, you know, for beautiful, awesome things to be, you know, to be in awe of nature, there has to be a God to have created it. I mean, there's no more logic behind it than any of the other arguments, but it appeals.
Yeah, I gotta be honest with you. I'm really having a hard time following that as a logical argument, or even as a logical feelings. Like, I'm trying to understand what you're telling me.
Yeah.
And I hear everything, but it's not acting up, and I guess that's the point.
It resonates with a lot of people.
You know, props to the lady for swimming all that way, and I think maybe what can also do this as well is a lot of people fall under the labels, and we've talked about labels before, if they become a believer, like if they say, hey, I believe in God, that makes me a believer, they may not realize that the other side of the fence also believes things too. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in terms of the number of beliefs they have in common, mm-hmm. love, family, social security, you know, property, being kind, humanism, all those things line up between both the people who believe in God and the people who don't, for the most part, at least in the general sense.
Yeah.
And the only thing that's really different is that, do you believe in a God, yes or no? And if you stack up all the other beliefs, you find that like 99.9% of all the beliefs are in common. So if that's the case, why does one side get to have the believing label or the believer label and the other side doesn't? It doesn't seem to make sense.
Yeah.
So if one side can have awe, the other side should be able to also have awe as well, because for the most part, they're very common with each other.
I think that's
something that people should take the time to realize.
Yeah. It goes a lot deeper than that, much more complicated, because if you go out in society, let's say we went down to downtown Knoxville right now and we rounded up 100 people, and we got these people because we were walking around asking them one single question. Do you believe in God? And they said yes, and we'd round them up and we'd bring them together. And then we close the doors and then ask one of them about the particulars of his God. We would start getting division, because we would get Catholics and Protestants and Jews and Hindus and Islamists. You know, that's one of the reasons why they were so successful in getting in God we trust on the money, because who could argue with that? If you're a believer of any kind, you know, you want that on the money. But when you get right down to it, you know, you're talking about a different God than your neighbor. And that has divided humanity for millennia.
Yeah, it's a true thing. You know, my mom is Mama Wombat, Jehovah's Witness. She raised us originally as Christian, and no witnesses will consider themselves separate from just, you know, the standard Christian. But my sister, who was raised with me, stayed in the faith, and I left the faith. So we had visited each other when I was graduating. And we were sitting around the breakfast table, and my sister and my mom would pray, and I'm not praying because, you know, I don't pray, I don't believe in that. And they're both giving me the dirty eye, but in my opinion, I didn't bring this up at the table, but I was like, you guys are both praying to two different gods. Like, when you guys figure it out, then you can probably start, like, when you convince the other that you're right, then you can probably look at me and try to convince me otherwise.
But right.
For the most part, we're all doing something different. Even though you're both praying and it feels like you're doing the same thing together, you're really not.
Yeah.
I can even imagine that if you go to Islam, I've worked with some of Muslims before. The beliefs among two different Muslims will be very, very different based on which scholars they follow that inform them on the particular context of the Quran that they're reading.
Sure.
Or the Hadith. Multiple different scholars that have different interpretations that somewhat resemble or are somewhat close, but in further detail can be radically different, to the degree that the Quran will say, hey, XXX is bad, but an interpretation can mean XXX is good. Sometimes it was good for those people at that time, but now it's bad. So another person can just say, hey, if it says it's bad here, it's bad all the time. It's the same thing with the Bible. You can either take it literally or in context.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And some people take it as a metaphor, and some people take it as an absolute.
And then,
even among Christians, they have varying degrees of belief and different shades of what they think a Christian actually is. So like I said, yeah, if you got the 100 people and you brought them in, you probably end up with maybe 1,000 different versions of every religion, you know, just that set number of people.
Yeah, well, at least 100.
Yeah, you get 100. You at least get 100. Yeah.
Yeah.
You may end up with a lot more than that, though, yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. It's particularly when you ask somebody to start describing a religion other than theirs, and then you get a person who thinks they know what another religion is like, and you actually get a person from that religion who was raised in it, you get an argument there.
At that point, you start getting a parody of what the religion actually is. And I think for the most part, everyone... And I know this sounds weird, and you probably won't like this, and here's an argument we can probably talk about, but I think for the most part, I think everyone believes in the God that fits them the best on a personal level. And because there's so many, and I think that's consistent among all different people, regardless of whatever they call their religion. They pick the religion that fits their personality. And that person might be influenced by how they're raised, the culture, the society, the particular region that they're in. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you're following the guy that you feel the most comfortable with. You're shopping until you found something that fits, and once you find something that fits, that's when that relationship begins to start, where you become more sedentary, where you invest in this idea so much that it becomes a part of your identity, to the point where when someone says that, they're really just saying me. Like, it's more comforting to believe that I made the universe and that I'm so important that the universe won't exist without me than for me to think that I'm a separate part of it in such a meaningless respect. Even though that could actually be the case. Like, it could just be a flip of that's in a very, time immemorial point of the universe. Like, what would this look like? If we die, the universe isn't going to change anytime soon.
Right.
But that doesn't feel as comfortable as saying, you know, there's this God who cares about me, who knows everything about me, who loves the same music I like, who likes the same lifestyles I like, and who will put me in an everlasting paradise when I die because I'm important.
Right.
That feels so much better. It's more comforting. And a lot of people will gravitate to that.
Well, think about
and because of that, I think you're more willing to go for really bad arguments to explain the truth, like arguments in the grit.
Yeah.
You're willing to delude yourself so that you can continue to please yourself in a way.
Yeah, the thing about it is, it's not so much they pick the religion that they identify with. That's all well and good, and I'm sure they do. But so many people pick the religion they were raised in. I mean, that's far and beyond picking a religion. And even if they did pick it, they pick the interpretation of that religion that they can live with, which may be very different than their neighbors. Now, you know, a lot of people say that you get your morals from the Bible. And they'll swear by it up and down. But I can prove that they don't. You want to hear me prove it?
Give me one example, but then we got to get back to arguments. That's the topic of today. I don't want to know what the impact of it.
All right.
On your apologies.
Well, if they said that their morals came from the Bible, then they should be okay with stoning unfaithful wives on their wedding night. They should be okay with stoning unruly children. But they don't do that. They pick and choose the things out of the Bible that they support, and they leave behind the things that they don't support. And in order to do that, they have to have a moral system that is separate from the Bible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I couldn't say that. Morality is a system. It's not a set of rules.
Right.
So if they're using a separate system apart from the Bible, mm-hmm. to say what they're going to accept and what not, not going to accept in the Bible, they're clearly not using the Bible as their key.
Right. So you want to get back to the arguments for God's existence, is that it?
Let's get to the next one. So we're going over argumentism, which is using, I don't know, as a way to prove things, which isn't very good, but that doesn't mean it's bad to say, I don't know. It's totally fine to be ignorant about things.
Yeah.
It's bad to use that ignorance as proof to show that things are true or not.
And
inform yourself.
Right. And don't be willfully ignorant. Be willing to learn.
Exactly.
Go to the logical and knowledge mat for the things you believe in. Be willing to study them and concede some points when you see good points against them. But getting back to the argument for God's existence, I'd like to talk about four particular ones next, if that's all right.
Okay.
The ontological argument, which is the...
that's a big word.
Yeah. It dates back to St. Anselm, a 11th century philosopher. It argues that once we mentally grasp the concept of God and we can see that God's non-existence is impossible. I mean, that's it. It's a conceptual thing. Once we get the conception of God, it means he exists, because we couldn't get that conception if he didn't exist. Well, let's go on past that and go to the first cause. You know, everything has a cause. So if you go back to the very beginning...
That's different from an ontological argument, as far as I understand it. Can I give you my definition of it real quick?
Of what? Which one?
Okay, ontological argument.
Oh, sure, go ahead.
So the ontological argument is basically trying to define a God into existence by saying if God is the most amazing thing and most perfect thing, then he must exist, because a God that exists would obviously be more perfect and great than a God that doesn't exist.
Right. Existence would be an attribute he would have. Right.
Which is like, you didn't really prove they exist. You basically just define what a God is, then claim that he existed, and then through your definition, support the fact that, or support right. the concept that that God might actually exist.
Yeah.
You haven't shown any additional information.
No, you create an argument, claim that the argument is true, and claim success in proving God's existence.
Sure. The problem. Something literally into existence.
Yeah.
It's not as good of an argument as
right.
you can pick it apart. Because you can apply it to anything. You can say, instead of God, you can say, hey, the most wonderful God must be able to do my calculus homework. There, and obviously the most wonderful God that can do my calculus homework would be more wonderful than a dog that doesn't exist at all.
Right.
Can't do my calculus homework.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore I must have a God that
yeah.
can do my calculus homework. Cool. That's a bad logic, and I can apply it to anything I want.
Yeah, or, the most wonderful horse, the most wonderful horse in the world would be a unicorn, because, you know, they have this golden horn coming out of their forehead, and they can fly, they probably have wings, you know, I can conceive of that, but they don't exist. Yeah.
Exactly. So just because you can conceive of it doesn't mean that it exists. That's one of the best apologetic
tactics. Okay. What about the first cause? I briefly mentioned that, you know, the first cause was originally put forward as everything has a cause, therefore if you go back to the very beginning, there has to be a first cause. And then,
okay,
you know,
how did you figure out everything had a cause?
Well, that's a given in philosophy. At least it was.
Really?
Back in the time.
Where is that everything has a cause? What about causes?
There are no such thing as uncaused causes, which is what their argument was. But anyway.
Yeah, so my argument against the first cause argument is the they try to sneak in premises before they get the final, you know, statement, which is, therefore God must exist.
Yeah.
And if you have a problem with the very first premise that they produce, you should have everything else falls apart.
Right.
And the first premise they say is everything has a cause.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know, how did you demonstrate that?
Yeah.
Because you just can't say it. You just can't conceive it and assume that it's true.
Yeah.
You have to demonstrate that.
Well, the answer
and
is
that there are things that don't have causes, and that's totally fine. There's radioactive decay, for example. It's a pretty common example that a lot of people bring up. But it's a little bit too, if it's too heavy for a lot of people, you can just say, we have a term called causeless. There's, like, things that don't have cause. And what would those, like, by definition, they don't have a cause. So I can bring up examples of those, but there's more things other than just radioactive decay for why things break apart. There's, I don't want to bring up any more scientific terms than that. But essentially, you know, if you can't demonstrate that everything has a cause, then I'm not going to follow the rest of the argument. And until you demonstrate that, I don't have to believe you and continue with the rest of the argument.
And you've also got to prove that God doesn't have to have a cause. And you can't prove that either. But I'm at the bottom of the hour. I do need to take a break. We're going to play a song here in a second and do a station identification. So we'll be back in about 5.5 minutes. And
all right.
Oh, what? What?
Let's go.
Here we go.
Let's go.
Bye-bye.
If you live in or around the Knoxville area and are questioning your religious beliefs or simply believe in one less God than everyone else, well, you're not alone. The Atheist Society of Knoxville is a fun and friendly group of people just like you that meets twice a week at a bar or restaurant. We meet every Tuesday night following the show at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria for happy hour. You'll find our group either inside or on the patio. Look for Richard Dawkins' silver-jacketed book, The God Delusion, standing upright on the table. But if you plan to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch, please don't. We all question what we believe at one point in our lives. If this is the time for you, come join us for food, drink, conversation, and fun.
We're all connected to each other biologically, to the earth, chemically, to the rest of the universe atomically.
I think nature's imagination is so much greater than man. He's never gonna let us relax.
We live in an in-between universe where things change all right, but according to patterns, rules, or as we call them,
laws of nature.
I'm this guy standing on a planet. Really, I'm just a speck. I'm just a speck compared with a star. The planet is just another speck. To think about all of this, to think about the vast emptiness of space. There's billions and billions of stars, billions and billions of specks. The beauty of a living thing is not the atoms that go into it, but the way those atoms are put together. The cosmos is also within us. We're made of star stuff. We are away. The cosmos can know itself.
Across the sea of space, the stars are other suns. We've traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
We're all connected to each other biologically, to the Earth chemically, to the rest of the universe atomic.
I find it elevating and exhilarating to discover that we live in a universe which permits the evolution of molecular machines as intricate and subtle as we.
In my body are traceable to phenomenon in the cosmos that makes me want to grab people in the street and say, have you heard this?
The beauty of a living thing is not the atoms that go into it, but the way those atoms are put together. The cosmos is also within us. We're made of star stuff. We are away. The cosmos can know itself.
There's this tremendous mass of waves all over in space, which is the light bouncing around the room, going from one thing to the other. And it's all really there, really, really there. But you gotta stop and think about it, about the complexity, and really get the play. It's all really there, really, really there. The inconceivable nature, nature. To think about all of this, to think about the vast emptiness of space. There's billions and billions of stars, billions and billions of specks.
The beauty of a living thing is not the atoms that go into it, but the way those atoms are put together. The cosmos is also within us. We're made of star stuff. We are away. The cosmos and know itself.
Across the sea of space, the stars are other suns. We've traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
Find stories of talking snakes laughable? Do you prefer the scientific method over supernatural beliefs? Are you concerned about religious leaders and organizations imposing their values and rules on your body, your family, and the rest of our society? Well, take comfort in the fact that you're not alone. The Rationalists of East Tennessee meets weekly for fellowship and provides a forum for people who support skeptical thinking and rational discussion of these and other issues. To find out more information or to find out about our next meeting, visit us on the web at www.rationalist.org.
And we're back. This is Doubter 5, Free Thought Radio Hour. This is WOZOLPFM 103.9 live in Knoxville, Tennessee. We have Wombat on the line.
The Wombat!
Hey, Wombat! And Riv has joined us at the break.
Hello.
So welcome, Riv.
Hello.
We're talking about Christian apologetics, apologetic tactics, and also some of the philosophical arguments for God and how to answer them. We have answered, or at least talked about, a couple of them already. Let me see where I am here. There it is. We talked about the ontological argument, the first cause argument. The next
and
is
argument from ignorance.
Argument from ignorance, right. But I'm talking about right now argument from specific arguments, philosophical arguments for the argument for God. The next is the argument from design, and then we've all heard this in creationism and the arguments against evolution, saying evolution is too complex. That's your argument from complexity. We're saying only a God could have created anything like that. It's just too complex to have come up through nature naturally. Nature naturally, say that three times. The problem is that we don't know everything that nature can do. We're pretty sure that it can do an awful lot of these things because of the design that occurs naturally in nature, like the design of a snowflake or an apple or something like that, or an apple tree. What's funny was the person who put this argument forward was, who was it, Paley? The watchmaker argument, saying if you're walking along a beach or in the forest and you see a watch laying on the ground, you can look at that and you can tell that it's different from its surrounding. It obviously had a designer. Well, that argument falls apart on its own merits because, according to Christians and all the other religions, everything laying around that watch is also designed. The leaves, yeah. the twigs, the trees, the rocks, all of that. So what would make that different? The thing that would make it different is the other things weren't designed. They occurred naturally due to evolution and natural selection. Some could say they were designed by the pressure of the environment and the selection of nature acting upon the gene pool, but it's not something that would be an intelligent design. Any other?
Go ahead.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to say about the argument from design?
Yeah. I got two things to say. I agree with what you just said, specifically about the watchmaker. One of the things that defeats that argument for me is how we as people recognize whether something has been designed or not designed. And the way how we figure that out is by comparing it with things that we know happen to be designed or not. And if you can't recognize that, we don't know if it's been designed or not.
Which is an argument.
A really good example of this is, if you were to go to, say, another planet in another galaxy, and I dropped you off there, and you're in this weird rock formation, and you don't know what you're really looking at, you wouldn't be able to tell what a designed rock formation from what occurred naturally in nature, because you don't have anything to reference it off of. But with the watchmaker argument, you know specifically that a watch is something that you can recognize as something that's being designed or not.
We know we're going to watch factory.
Excuse me?
We know we can go to a watch factory. We can find engineers that are there that are designing.
Yeah, yeah. We can look it up on the internet. We have multiple examples. We know how watches, to a degree, to some extent, are made, not met through natural processes. So because we have that comparison in mind ahead of time, that's how we recognize if something's been designed or not. Not just by walking down the beach and saying, oh, there's a watch.
Right.
Designer.
Or just
like,
claiming.
You know, you recognize the watch. You know how watches are made.
Or just making a claim that something that you find in nature is too complex to be made by anything but a God. That's one of your classical arguments from ignorance.
So let's talk about complexity. The thing about design, the hallmark of design is not complexity, it's simplicity. The exact opposite of what most people will argue for. Mm-hmm. If I were to make a car that had 1,000 moving parts versus a car that had one moving part that still got me from A to B, the car with one moving part that will be less likely to break down because it has less moving parts is a better designed vehicle than the car with 100 moving parts that can all be potentially faulty.
Yeah.
If I have a phone that has 12 billion parts in it, 12 billion pieces of little, you know, transistors and stuff, versus one phone that has, you know, maybe 4 transistors, that 4-transistor phone is designed more simply than the other phone that I have. It's what we see in technology, it's what we see in car developments, we see in all the design processes that we have. Simplicity is only the hallmark of a design, not complexity. So when people say, hey, this is very, 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 very complex, must be made by the ultimate mind, which is God, I kind of find that argument a little bit haphazardous or contradictory for what they actually think design is rated for.
Right. Now, we've talked about argument from design, the moral argument, ontological argument, and the first cause. But one of the things that all of these have in common is that they argue for a generic God, a beginner, a creator, a deist God. But every religion on the planet claims that these arguments prove their God, There's a huge leap there. All of their work is ahead of them, even if these arguments were true, and all of the atheists in the world say, okay, yeah, you're right, these arguments are true, I'm not an atheist anymore, I'm a deist. You would still have all of your work ahead of you to prove that that deist God, that generic God, is the God of your Bible, or the Quran, or the what are the hundreds of the other holy books throughout the planet. And that work has not been done. Nobody's really addressed that problem.
Yeah. Like the Bhagavad Gita, the Church of the Flame.
Spaghetti Monster.
Spaghetti Monster, Holy Text, yeah. The Zen, Hinduism, whatever books we have. What's the Scientology book? Does anyone know?
Scientology. Does anyone know L. Ron Hubbard book, but I can't remember the name of it. Callers? If you know the name of the book, call in 333-5937, and we'll be happy to talk to you about it.
But he made a good point, though.
Okay. But yeah, a lot of different books, especially a lot of holy books, make the claim that their God exists, and they'll use these same general arguments to support that their God does in fact exist, even though these general arguments don't point to their God specifically.
No. Mm-hmm.
Which is really interesting when you think about it.
Yeah. You were going to say something there, Rip?
All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, in relation, concerning L. Ron Hubbard, you know, about the, whether the, it's, the quote was, if I have it correctly, that the quickest way to make a fortune or $1 million was to create a religion or something. So he created a religion.
What's called that?
Let me see, Mike. Hello, this is Larry at our Doubter 5 at Free Thought Radio Hour. You are on the air. You have a comment or question?
The title of the book you're looking for is Dianetics.
Dianetics.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. That's right. Well, good.
All right, well, hey, this is Faithless Ford. I was listening in today.
Hey, Faithless.
And you asked a question, and I knew the answer, or at least thought I did, so I thought I'd call.
I'm going to get River to come up with a prize and send to you.
My big day.
Yeah. Okay, do you have any other comments or questions, observations?
Well, I'll confess, I just noticed the clock, didn't realize you'd been on, so I haven't been listening long. Apparently you're talking about Christian arguments for there being a God.
Well, these are general.
I thought you made an unnecessary concession. You said that I forget exactly how you phrased it. Well, the concession you made is that they might be able to prove,
right,
you know, the God of the Bible, meaning
even if they did, then we conceded it.
You know, Yahweh or Elohim. Mm-hmm. You know, these are all ways to describe the Judeo-Christian God. But in reality, the Bible is specific enough that we can know that it's fiction because there's a talking snake.
Yeah, I'm talking
and
donkey,
we
too.
Can
And if you made a woman from a man's rib, she would have the same DNA, so therefore she'd be a man.
Well, and as clone. Well as we would all.
Whoa, hold on. I got arguments against that biochemistry now. But the talking snake is a really, really good
same DNA.
Thank you, sir.
Or aside from the trivial amount that would have occurred in 6,000 years of evolution. Now, the other thing is that you can't reconcile the Bible by saying that, the Bible, you know, clearly says 6 days of creation and God took a day off. We can look around us and modern science has proven that the, you know, universe doesn't look like the universe described by the Hebrew Bible. And you can't fix it by saying, day means really long period of time. Because if you read the Hebrew Bible, you'll see that on the third really long period of time, the plants were created. And then only on the fourth really long period of time was the sun and the moon and the stars created. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we know this is just, mm-hmm. you know, Bronze Age myth.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, written by people who, you know, were probably telling stories to entertain one another, and then it got taken seriously.
I agree. And also, how did you have days anyway without a sun coming up and going down?
Yeah. It's, you know, one preposterous thing after another. The observation I just made, you know, the stars and the sun and the moon on the fourth day as, you know, a tremendous effort compared to everything else. You know, so if the deity got tired from all that creation, the deity would need to rest after that. But more importantly, we can look out with an amateur telescope and see stars forming right now. It happens naturally in the universe.
Right.
There's no mystery about how stars form, and no mystery about how planets form around them. And there's details to get further understood. And that's a fascinating area of advance that science is tackling right now. We could really say that astronomy is in the most golden age it ever has had. And it has the prospects of getting even better. In a couple of years, the Webb Space Telescope gets launched. That'll let us see things we've not been able to see before because it's both bigger as well as it sees in the infrared, which penetrates dust and gas that blocks our view of much of the interior of our own galaxy anyway.
Oh, very cool.
Oh, what's that also read about it? The telescope that's supposed to launch either later this year or later next year, that's supposed to basically combine angle and power, I guess, from different parts of the world to make a much longer projection.
And it sounds like you're referring to an interferometer. An interferometer is a device that combines light using separate mirrors to produce certain kinds of measurements that have higher resolution. And it's not because it's made out of separate mirrors. It's merely because when you make it out of separate mirrors, you can move them a long distance away. The resolution of a telescope is something like proportional to the diameter of it. And it becomes, the mass of a telescope, though, goes up sort of like the cube of the diameter. And so as you make them bigger, they get mechanically unwieldy. And but if you're willing to cut the mirror and move pieces of it farther away, you can gain some of that enhanced resolution. You introduce other artifacts as well, but you know, there are techniques already that combine optical telescopes in that way to make an optical interferometer, and radio interferometers have been done. It may have been as early as the 1960s and certainly by the 1970s.
Well, very cool. I'll look forward to that. We've all had seen Hubble pictures for decades, and I'm more than happy to see even deeper and better into the cosmos than ever before.
And certainly the Hubble pictures show us a beautiful universe, sometimes a violent universe, and certainly a universe that is almost everywhere unfriendly to life.
Mm-hmm.
But beautiful nevertheless.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much for calling in. We're going to go back to the regular.
I hope to get a few more callers, and I'll go back to listening. Bye for now.
Thank you, Forrest. Okay. Where we left off was we talked about the evidence for generic gods or the deist god. Now we can move into a couple of Christian apologetics. You may have heard of the liar, lord, or lunatic argument. That was, let's see, who put that out? C.S. Lewis put that out in Mere Christianity. And they say it's indefensible, and I understand why. Because, you know about false dichotomies, right? Well, this is a false trichotomy. Ty, you with us?
Hey, I'm on mute. Hello. Can anyone hear me?
Yeah. The speaker that you're on is has a timeout feature on it. And it timed out because you were quiet. Anyway,
nice to be back. Can you hear me right now?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Can I make a couple of comments on that guy's call real quick?
Sure. Go
hello?
Yes, go for it.
Cool. Thank you so much for that call. Also, I also looked up the book, The Flying Spaghetti Monster Religion, and they call themselves the Gospel of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. That's the name of the whole book. Also, you had mentioned that it's impossible to make a female clone out of a male clone. It is. It's technically a workaround because men have an XY chromosome and women have two X chromosomes. So all you have to do is take out the Y chromosome and the male, double the X, and basically you have the female variant of that man. It's not as genetically stable because you've doubled a certain genetic feature, but it would be a woman at that point, and you wouldn't be using any new genes. So technically, that would be a female clone. Yeah,
so they just go to their local lab and work that up. Is that right?
All right, keep going. I'm enjoying this stuff.
No, the thing about it is, why, if he created man out of dust, why couldn't he have created woman out of dust? I mean, he could have made it as different as he wanted to without having to worry about pain and suffering of the man. And
he had to make a dependency on stationing the men above the woman, you know?
Yeah, right. And which is the whole foundation for misogyny in the Bible. Okay, getting back to the Christian argument, Lord Liar Lunatic, they're saying those who are not persuaded by Christianity also give a respect for Jesus, saying that, you know, he could have lived, but was he Lord, Liar, or Lunatic? He'd have to be one of the three. Well, no, it's a trichotomy, it's a false trichotomy, and he could have been legend. He could have been made up. He could have been non-existent. Or it could be just myth that was built up around the man. Yeah. So it's false on the face because he only gives us three choices when there could be quite a few more. Do you have anything to say before I go on to the next one?
No, but that's a great word. I've never heard the word trichotomy before. Keep going.
Yeah. The evidence for a resurrection... they're talking about, well, if there's an empty tomb, that's good enough for me. You know, I'm a Christian because of the empty tomb. That's all the evidence I need. However, it's still just a story. There is no evidence. You can go to Israel right now and you can get a sightseeing tour that will take you to see the tomb. But there's no evidence it was originally Jesus' tomb, or no evidence that they didn't dig it 100 years ago and call it Jesus' tomb. And it's just a story.
Hey, how about this? I could say in my book, and we're allowed to disagree, I would say that is evidence that there's something in the book that says this is here and that location actually exists, but it's not necessarily evidence for the extraordinary claim that was made in the book. Yeah, and if it is presented as evidence, it's not very compelling evidence.
Right.
And if that's like the best quality of evidence you've got, I'm not convinced.
That would be like saying that Spider-Man is real because they mentioned New York City in the comic books, you know. Another thing that they argue for the resurrection of Jesus Christ is that would you die for a lie? You know, all the followers of Jesus, you know, his disciples, went to their graves without recanting it. Well, that's the story. The story says that. There's no reason to believe that the story is true or those people actually lived. However, there are a lot of reasons that people would go to their death for a lie. And the reason is that, one, they wanted to support the new religion that they just brought up in the air. I mean, brought up into fruition, wanted to make sure it kept going, so they died with the lie on their lips. We have people even today, if you put out a manhunt for a killer in a murder case, you will have people come down to the station and say they killed him when the police easily find out that they couldn't have done it. They didn't have an opportunity or the weapon or whatever, or didn't even know the story of the death. I've got an article on my website which goes into a lot of different reasons for why they could have lied for this purpose. But it's
the same reason why they don't want people to say the name of, like, shooters over the news, because they don't want to encourage other people to say, hey, this guy's getting notoriety.
Right.
I'd like to have notoriety in their life. My life's kind of boring.
Yeah.
I'll go down there and be a part of this story and maybe shoot up a place as well. Like, there are people, like, literally who would volunteer themselves as a murder suspect simply because, and then they get to the point where they actually may convince themselves of the fact that that's the case. But I think, mental health issues aside, they may just have a
human condition
yeah.
that makes them try to seek things that are not true, but they can't discern from non-truth and truth, and they'll believe whatever they want
to. They could have a psychological condition.
And even if it's at the detriment of their own freedom.
Right.
Bizarre thing.
Mm-hmm. I agree. We're getting down to about 5 minutes till the end, so we've got about 2.5 minutes or so that we can talk. Are there any end of hour items you'd like to bring up before we close out?
Cool. How about a summary?
Oh. hold on a second. Sure. We talked about the ontological argument, which is just basically logical arguments or conceptual arguments for God. We talked about the first cause argument, the argument from design, and the moral argument, which are all just arguments for a generic God. It doesn't say that any of the gods that you could create with these arguments are the gods of Christianity or Hinduism or Islam or any of the 1,000 other religions in the world that claim that a God exists.
Right.
Or Flying Spaghetti Monster or whatever. The other arguments for the resurrection, for Jesus' life and his the special things that he did while he was alive, the miracles and stuff, are stories. They are stories, but the stories are not evidence. They're anecdotal evidence, which is not good evidence, I'll put it that way.
It's not the best.
Yeah.
But what you're trying to prove is not very good. There's no amount of anecdotal evidence that will ultimately convince someone who's looking for a reasonable argument for the existence of God mm-hmm. to believe your case.
Right. Riv, do you have any final words?
Well, just out of the evidence that I hear used a lot, and I think there needs to be more discussion on it before giving it, you know, any kind of credulity as to what it could be or could not be. But people often mention the Shroud of Turin and say, that's the ticket. But it has so many different carbon dates mm-hmm. on what day this was chipped off, this clip, that one's copying the Vatican. There's so much right. it's not solid.
Yeah, and again, the stories behind the Shroud are anecdotal evidence. We have no evidence that they actually support any kind of fact about the Shroud itself. And that's about it. My final words, I guess, are do your homework. Study these things, learn the arguments, learn the anti-apologetics. Go to my website. My most recent article was Apologetic Tactics. In other words, what they do to win arguments, what the Christian apologists do to win arguments. And be aware of them, be aware of the things that they'll try. And the website is digitalfreethought.com, and click on the blog button. And with that, I guess we'll sign off. This is Doubter 5.
Riv.
And the Wombat.
The Wombat. And we'll see you next week about 6 o'clock on this local station.
Words disappear. Words once so clear. All my